Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD, and I want to welcome everyone who's listening to the podcast this afternoon. It's the Miss ADD, possibly hour and a half, maybe more than an hour. I wanted to share with everybody how I came up with this idea for this show today. Last week, I did not have a podcast because I was up in San Francisco with my son, whose birthday, he turned 26, ADHD, and also struggling a little bit with bipolar. He's got the hypomania, so it's not like he goes into full-blown depression. And right now, he's just struggling with medication, the right one to be on, and whether or not he's going to continue on that path or possibly go to holistic, which I'm encouraging because I believe a lot in. Anyway, as my life partner and I were leaving the hotel, we noticed a family that was leaving also, and they had four children, which is a lot, and two parents. And there was a lot of yelling going on at the kids, and I noticed a lot of this. I guess I kind of became attuned to it this past weekend when I was in San Francisco. A lot of yelling going on. And when I met my son for breakfast that morning and his girlfriend, I asked him this question. And this is how this show was created. I said, do we have kids to yell at them? And I kind of asked him that, knowing full well that when I was raising him, when he was very young, I was a yeller. And he said, you know, it's a really interesting question, but by nature, what he said is he believes that, you know, especially Americans, because we're an individualistic society, not a collective society, so we can be pretty selfish, and we have these wonderful expectations when we have these children, believing that, you know, they're going to be an extension of us and possibly do things that we always wanted to do in our life that we couldn't do. And then we have this little tiny id, which is one of the stages of Freud's development, who shows up, who doesn't always listen, doesn't pay attention to what we're telling them to do, possibly wants to go off and explore and do some exciting things for themselves, and we're not there because we're in a rush or we have things that we have to do that are, at that point in time, more important to us. So kind of what Chris is saying, my son, is that do we lose ourselves in the parenting process, and is that part of the reason why we tend to be a little bit on edge when dealing with kids, because it's not always about us. It has to be about them, and we didn't expect the level of that to happen. Then on top of that, you add attention deficit disorder, which we can't regulate our emotions, and we can't focus, and we procrastinate, and especially when parents are trying to deal with school, the kids don't always make us feel good about ourselves. So back with us today is Anthony Marino. So I'm going to put him on and ask him, so what do you think about what I just said and how I came to really discover that I wanted to do this show on positive parenting for ADHD?
Well, thanks for having me back on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
I really think that it is important, especially with ADD and ADHD kids, in particular. I feel that one thing you see about parenting, at least from the teacher side of everything,
right,
is not enough encouragement, and almost they tend to want to give up on their kid as a student, I feel, because they have to give them that much more time, that much more effort. There might be sometimes a lot of families, one person that does good, and then the other child is the one struggling. So they feel that, oh, he just can't learn it, or he's dumb, or whatever excuse we like to draw from that. But the reality is that they just need a little bit more time, a little more encouragement. Maybe they're just not good at that subject, and they're really good at another subject.
Right.
That was my problem in school. I was really good at certain subjects,
right,
and I was really awful at other ones.
Right.
So it wasn't that I was a terrible student, but it just seemed like that when you would see D and Fs on certain things and you would see B and A's in others.
Right.
So you just have to be patient and be really encouraging, because not everybody gets everything very fast, especially in today's society. I feel, and I think you might get me on this one, Justine, is that we like to use the word genius a lot. Like,
right.
This person's a genius. They thought this person's a genius. And not everybody's born a genius. There's a lot of people out there who are really good at something because they put a lot of hard work and effort into it.
Right. Right, exactly.
And that's what we have to realize, I think, with students, especially ADHD and ADD kids. You have to be really patient and hardworking with them.
Right. So let's start off with little kids, okay? Start off with really young, young little kids. Now, what I've been noticing in visiting a lot of these sites on Facebook, because Facebook seems to have a lot of groups for ADD, what I've been noticing is kids have been diagnosed very young, and from what the DSM says, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which is my Bible as a therapist, ADD/ADHD is not supposed to be diagnosed until they're 7. But that being said, I see a lot of kids, and whether they're from the UK or wherever they are in the United States, so there's kids being diagnosed and being put on meds as early as 3 years old, which is a little alarming to me, but that's just my opinion. I don't want to upset anybody who's listening out there. But part of the reason, Anthony, I notice that they're being diagnosed is and put on meds is because their behavior is just so out of control, completely out of control. They're screaming, they're yelling. These are the things that I'm reading. You know, some of the kids are being violent, believe it or not, at that young age, like 3, 4, 5, 6. Which is hard to believe, but it does exist. Okay, so let's start there, and let's talk about attachment, okay? Because attachment, attunement, as we talk about it in therapy, really begins when the child is born, okay? And how the parent reacts to that child. Facial expressions as the child begins to see is very important, that the child sees acceptance and kindness in the face of the mother. We did something in graduate school. I went to Pepperdine one time where they showed us a study that was done of infant children who, when their mother was smiling, their reaction was smiling. But the scary thing was the mother stopped smiling and got very sullen in their look, and the child got very anxious and very upset and started to cry. So why am I telling you this? Because I really believe that a lot of how our children behave has a lot to do with us. Do you agree with that?
100%.
So for a minute, can you talk to me about how far back you remember in your family, how little you can remember, and the attachment that happened with your mom or dad, and did you feel total acceptance, or was it difficult at times? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think you, at least for me, I always got attached. I was like more of a mama's boy.
Okay.
So I tend to get attached more to my mother. One thing in particular I was talking about recently, actually, to my sister was my father gets anxious whenever we go to church. We had to go to church recently. So I'll tell you, it's kind of a long story. But I had to go to church with my family recently, and my dad becomes this train wreck.
Why?
You know? And I was saying the same thing. I was like, well, I asked my sister that, and she says, because she's like, Grandpa was really mean to Dad when every time he went to church. And then I was saying, I get anxiety when I have to go, or when I have to go as well. Like, my anxiety boils. Because my dad used to, when I was misbehaving, my dad used to take me out and, like, hit me, you know?
Right.
And so we talked about that. But that's one thing in particular I was saying about, like, you know, your parent passes down, you know.
Exactly.
From when, so my anxiety builds every time I'm going to go there.
Right.
Now, and he got it from his, you know.
And you got it from yours.
Yeah, and I got it from mine. So it's like this generational thing.
Right.
I mean, I'm not as bad as he is.
Right.
Like, I could tell, but because I'm slowly dwindling, you know.
Right.
But you can see, you could see how, why that happened. I had no idea. This is just like happening to me every time I go. I just get anxiety.
So,
and I hated it.
So you and I are both Italians.
Yeah, we're both Italian.
I'm from 3,000 miles away.
Yeah.
But I can tell you a story that I remember vividly was my dad was the official photographer of the Brooklyn Diocese in New York. Uh-huh. And so we had to go, as little kids, we'd have to go to dedications of schools and churches because he had to be there. It was important that my mom was there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to sit sometimes for 2 or 3 hours. And I remember my dad coming over and asking my mom, did she misbehave? And I really didn't because I was terrified of what the ramifications were going to be if I did, okay? So just like you, I have a little bit of anxiety when I go into places like churches because I remember the trouble that we would get into for not being able to sit still or pay attention to what the priest is saying. But years ago, and you're a lot younger, you're 20 plus years younger than me, but years ago, parents, it was more about them than it was about understanding the child not being able to sit still. And especially back in the Stone Age, nobody knew about ADD when I was very young. They called it hyperactivity, and that was never even said to me. Okay. So nowadays, it's a little different because parents are more attuned to what their child's needs are, sometimes a little bit, dare I say, too much attuned, where the children get away with stuff and are not disciplined. And in the Greek language, discipline means to teach. Doesn't mean to hit and yell. Okay, so let's not be ADD and get off track. So we were talking about attachment and attunement. And so one of the things, if you have very young children out there, I would suggest that you figure out a way to get yourself some help to learn how to relax. I mean, one of the things that I can tell you now that I did wrong when my kids were young is I yelled too much, and I never hit my children because I got hit and I didn't believe in it. But I yelled too much, and I was depressed, and I didn't know I was depressed. I also had tons of anxiety. I was OCD. Didn't really understand that back then. And a lot of those feelings that I was having were being taken out on my children. And to take it a step further, what my son was talking about, I was working at the time. I was a buyer in a major department store. And my focus was more on the job because I needed to make money to make sure my family was okay. So coming home and sitting on the floor with my children, and especially my older son who was so ADHD, and trying to interact with him, that wasn't a goal for me. My goal was more orientated towards work, so that when I came home, it was all about being able to relax, possibly turn on TV, and I was not interacting with my children. I wasn't taking that time that I needed to do. If I could go back now, because of all the things I've learned about myself, I'm very mindful. So I do meditation and I live in the moment and I don't lose it the way I used to lose it. In fact, I haven't lost it in about 4 years. I'm very calm and I really wish I could have given that to my children. Were your parents, Anthony, volatile? Did they get excited easily?
Yes. I really want to talk about this and I can go off subject, but one of the things that now that I look back upon it is that today, especially as I would say from the 80s and the 90s, is that more particular is that you have two people working jobs now.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, and, you know, they're working 8 hours a day. Even I work a job. I want to come home. I want to relax. But with ADHD kids and ADD kids, it's really hard to do that. Not just regular kids, but, I mean, these kids who are more active and more hyper. And a lot of them fall into this trap. I have a lot of kids, and even in today's society, normal kids fall into this trap as well, who don't have these problems. But one thing that's pushed upon, especially the kid, the kind of kids like the kids we used to talk about, is video games. Is
yes.
a big out. And a lot of times it's easy to come home, hand a kid a portable PSP.
Right.
Here's the Xbox. Here's this. Go play in the room. And then you could just relax on the couch. And he's and the kid and video games is such a suction like for these kids because it's a lot of activity going really fast at a high rate. And so a lot of times I go to my school and the kids talk to me. They want to talk about video games because I play a lot of video games. I myself have been addicted to video games at times, you know, just a little bit here and there. But you see it a lot more today with all the electronics they have now more than ever. And that's one of the pitfalls a lot of parents can fall into because you get so tired. You know,
right.
like you were saying, you're tired. It's easy to hand a kid this.
Right.
To interact with them and
right.
how was your day? Let's talk, you know.
So one of the things that I'm going to encourage everybody out there to do is let's get back for a minute to these little kids
mm-hmm.
that I've been reading about on Facebook, okay? And when I post something positive, at one point, one of the parents, I think, got a little upset with me saying I didn't understand. And I, because of the level that they were going through with their children, and you know, I do understand because I had a child who was very hyperactive and he had oppositional defiant disorder. And eventually, this is my son who ended up with bipolar II. I'm not telling anybody out there because your child's oppositional defiant that they're going to end up with bipolar, but I have seen more of that than I have not seen. So I guess where I'm going with this, especially for the little children, is what can we do as parents to react in a different way with our children, in a positive way, so that we're not putting all the onus on the child, because that's what I see happening is the onus is put on the child. We're not really looking at what can we do as parents to make this better, because to be honest with you, in my own practice, when I have somebody call me up and want me to fix, which I don't fix anybody, their child, I absolutely work with the parent more than I do with the child, because it's the family system, the whole family, that really needs to be fixed. The communication isn't good. I mean, think about a kid who comes home. You can relate to this. He comes home from school. He's had a pretty positive day at school. He did well in a test, or he didn't get in trouble the way he normally gets in trouble, or she. They come home, and their parent is too wrapped up in their own stuff to take that extra time to sit down and hear about their day. I've been there because these kids come in and they're all over the place and they want to talk and they want to repeat things. And we as adults say, wait a minute, we've already heard that. So that's another way that these kids get very frustrated and they start acting out. Okay. So one of the things I want to let everybody know is insecure attachment. Okay, so when a child is very insecure because their parent is not consistent all the time, so that's insecure attachment, they're not really sure how the parent's going to react to them, that's where you get oppositional defiant disorder. Because the child will then act out and they will say to themselves, see, my parent really doesn't love me or really doesn't like me. And in acting out, other people are going to chastise them at the same time. And then the child can say to themselves, see, I was right. So I really am not worthy of my parent loving me. So you want to add?
Yeah, that's pretty dead on. I mean, a lot of times, well, basically, I have a student in particular who does a lot of this. And you get it in two ways, either by shutting down, that's
right.
a way of acting out, or being over the top. So those are two common, very oppositional defiant ways of doing it. And that's when you see that, and like you're saying, you can't, you're like, well, I can't fix it, this kid, because
no.
it's not you, it's how you react to it
right.
as a parent. So that's the number one thing tool that I know as a teacher that I use when I deal with kids who are in extreme cases
right.
of shutting down or over the top. And a lot of it has to do with engaging in them. And it's all, both of those things have to do with attention.
Yes.
They want attention, and they're getting it either by you going, poor baby, which is where they shut down and, you know, somebody gives them that kind of like, oh, come here kind of attention.
Right.
Or that, stop that. That's, you know, don't do that.
Right.
Those are the two reactions they want. And so what you have to find is a way to give them the proper reaction.
Right.
But not let them win the battle in that way. So
here's a perfect example. So let's say, you know, this little 5 or 6 year old comes home from school, whether it's
mm-hmm.
kindergarten or first grade, and you know, they really want to talk about their day. So the parent sits down with the child and says, tell me all about it. And the child begins to tell, and he begins, or she begins to repeat himself or herself over and over again, because they get, their mind is going 150 miles an hour. So they keep saying the same thing. So as a parent, if I was dealing with a child, I would say, hey, you know what? Let me repeat back to you what you just said to me, because I really want you to know that I'm listening to you. So let me tell you, I heard exactly what you said about the wonderful day that you had. You got an A-plus on the test. You didn't get in trouble at all. During recess, you played with 4 different children. Did I get that right? You see what I'm doing? I'm interacting with the child, and I'm repeating back to them so they know that I'm listening to what they're saying and taking that extra time to have them feel that I care enough to be able to repeat back. And then that repeating stops because they understand that you got exactly what they were saying to you. So I don't know if you notice that when you deal with kids in your class, it's important for you to give them that kind of feedback.
I had a kid test me once on something like that, you know, because I was doing 2 things at once, but I was listening to him.
Yeah.
And he was like, how did you do that? And I was like, it's called multitasking. I was like joking with him, you know. But it's true. You know, one of the things, too, is when you have those kids and they just want to talk, especially at the very young ages,
right,
like we're talking about, they just want to, they want to talk because they're trying to use the words and they're getting used to it. And, you know, they're so excited because everything's new and they're learning.
Right.
And so the best thing to do is kind of go through their day, be like, oh, how was this class? How was your math? How was your science?
Right.
How was your art class? You know, and then be like, oh, that's great. You got an A. How was this class go? And so you keep the conversations going because you know, like, how, well, who their teachers are and what classes they have. And that way they feel like, oh, he does care about, or she does care about what I'm learning and what I'm teaching, and
right,
they want to do good.
And one of the things I just want to add to what you said, when you ask a child how was something, they can very easily shut down and say fine. Whereas if you ask them a leading question, what did you do today in English? What did you do today in math? Then this way they have to answer you. They could say if they want nothing, but then you can say to them, well, so you sat for an hour in English and you didn't do anything? So what you want to do is ask them the kind of questions, leading questions, so that they feel that they really need to answer you. Because I know, especially in the world of school, when kids come home from school, I know I can reach back there to walking through the door and having my mother ask me, you know, 6 different questions that weren't about me, but were about how I did in school that day, and I'm sure you can relate to this.
That's more the high school years, though, but yeah.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating because it made me feel like they didn't care about me. They cared about what I did, not who I was. And I know I think I've said this before on other shows, but one of the things I did do right with my 2 boys is when they would leave for school every day, I would say to them, guys, school is what you do. It is not who you are. I wanted them to understand that if they were working hard and they brought C's home or even D's, but I knew they were working hard, I wasn't going to be upset because I wasn't defining them by the grades that they got. Whereas today, people define themselves by what they have and not what's inside. And I think that's a real important message. In fact, you missed group on Wednesday night, but we had a new kid that showed up, and he's in his early 20s. And when I told him that story, he actually said, gee, I wish you had been my mom, because for years, all he listened to was the negatives about school. So I think that really defines a child if you place how they do so much emphasis on how they do in school and not really what's in here.
Absolutely correct. I think it's like you say, it's better to raise, I mean, don't you want to raise a good person?
Exactly.
And, you know, and that's the most important thing,
mm-hmm.
rather than like this really intellectual, smart person who's a total jerk to everybody or something.
Right.
That's more, I think, least productive.
Right.
You know?
So for those of you who are listening and you want to know what to do to help yourself become better parents, when I mean that, I know you all love your children and so much of this is so difficult for you, but you really have to start taking care of yourself. I mean, I think Anthony, you will be able to relate to this because you've told me that you have to go to yoga every day because of the level of stress that you have in your job dealing with many of them oppositional defiant kids, some of them even worse than oppositional defiant. So think about a parent in a family where there's more than one child. I had two boys who were ADD, although my younger son was ADD and attentive, so he was not oppositional defiant. He was actually pretty easy. But I do work with parents who have a lot of kids in the family who have the hyperactivity and impulsivity. So you have to basically put your armor on when you're dealing with these children. You need the tools to be able to deal with them in a positive vein, not always yelling or being upset or having no time for them. So one of the things that I found has helped me tremendously from 5 years ago was mindfulness, which is just very similar to yoga because there's meditation involved. It's staying in the moment. Because I think one of the things that used to happen to me, especially with my older son as he was getting a little older, I would be concerned, how was he going to do in his life? So I was running to the future. Now, running to the future causes tons of anxiety. And going to the past causes depression. Staying in the moment is very peaceful. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be challenging at times, especially when you have those hard cases and the kid's acting out and you have to, and there's consequences to whatever's happening.
Right.
Whether it's good or bad consequences, I don't know the particular situation, and you have to be there and just watch, because you have to just remember, especially with, you know, children and you're dealing with these kids, is that you have to just understand that they're growing up. This is a part of growing up, learning boundaries.
Right.
And they test you, and they're going to test every boundary. It's not just you. You can't take that personal. They're testing the boundaries with you. When they go to school, they test it with teachers. They test it with everybody else.
Right.
And then you see people, like certain times you'll see them, they like, why doesn't he act that way with you, but he acts like that way with me? And then you're like, well, I don't let him do that. You ever see people say that?
Yes.
And then they're like, well, how do you do that? And it's like, and you look at them like they're crazy, you know, like,
right.
And I'm sure Justine can tell you this personally, but she sees kids all the time and they don't put up with, do half the stuff to her. They do with their kid. And then the parents are like, well, teach me that trick. And you're like, it's not a trick. It's like, it's doing the right thing at the right time. And like you saying, being in the moment,
right.
And not taking it personal and acting out and doing something crazy that the kids get the kid upset. It's going to get you upset, you know, and especially coming from Italian families, I could tell you a lot of emotions, a lot of drama.
Right.
And it's like those operas, you know, like everybody starts yelling at each other and then everybody's miserable and everybody goes to bed angry, you know?
Right. And when I see kids in my office, or if I go to their home, depending on the situation, I mean, I give them a lot of, and here's the word, and this is what I want all the parents out there to please write this word down. It's called acceptance. If your child feels acceptance for who they are, and not what they do, but who they are, you will be light years ahead of other parents in dealing with your children. That is why I do so well with kids in this population. Because either when they come into my office or I go to their house, I'm excited to see them and I accept them all their behaviors, everything, and we work through things together. And so this is one of the things that I try to work with on my clients, the parents of the kids that I see, because I see families as well, to have them understand that acceptance is probably the most important thing. So here to take this, and Anthony, you'll relate to this a step further. So the other night, because I'm on the board at CHAD,
okay,
Children and Adults with ADD, we actually had the people from SELPA, which is the special ed people, come in, and they basically deal with the entire South Bay and talk to parents about learning disabilities and IEPs and 504s, which is what I do. And here's something that I wanted to bring up during the meeting, but I didn't, because I like to take a step back when I'm there and let other people run it, is this simple thing. If you want your child to embrace their disability, as my son is now embracing his bipolar, and there's a reason for that, which I'll tell you in a moment, you have to role model to them that you accept it, that you understand that ADD is not a death sentence, that they may need accommodations in school, but you can present it to them like the reason they need accommodations is because they're special, which is what I did with my boys, so they embrace their IEPs. And if you get excited about the creative side of ADD and the gifted side, the gift, then your children will pick that up from you, and they won't be sad about it. They'll be more excited about it. What do you think, Anthony, from a standpoint of school? How would that work?
I think it's really important to be positive about the situation.
Right.
Absolutely. Because what tends to happen is when you have ADD or an ADHD kids, they don't quite fit in. And especially today with a lot of the pressures that teenagers have, looking a certain way, acting a certain part, they don't fit in. There's a lot of – that's when they start becoming the behavioral problems.
Right.
Whatever it is. So it's important, like you said, to keep a positive spin on this and to talk about the creativity of a lot of people. A lot of ADHD people are super creative people.
Yes.
There's a lot of positives to getting help,
right,
you know,
right,
and that it's not a negative thing. It's just something that you have to think about differently.
Exactly.
You have to just approach it at maybe this kind of curriculum, this straight up and down curriculum is not what they're going to excel at.
Right.
But maybe they can excel at something else. You never know.
Right. And here's the other piece. If you don't make it about you, if the parent doesn't make it about you, but you make it about the child, then the child feels that. And they feel like, wow, you know what? This isn't a death sentence. This is something that could be very exciting. So one of the things that I tell clients all the time is try and figure out, with your child's help, what their creative side is all about. And then try to incorporate that in the academic setting. For example, when we moved to California, both my boys being highly creative in the film world, they went to Palos Verdes High School, which has a program called Live from 205, which is a live news program that used to run twice a week, and my boys were very involved. My older son was the news director in 2006, before he graduated, and my younger son was the producer in 2009 before he graduated. And here's what happened. Because they were connected to school in a creative way, the moderator of the program held them to a standard. Everybody could not get lower than a C in any academic subject. So that pressure was off me. It was now his deal. And they both knew that, and they wanted to stay in the program. Okay. So that's what really helped them. So I encourage parents all the time. I'm not saying that every school out there's going to be a program like Live from 205, but there are programs out there. There are things, and you probably can see how important it is for kids to bring their creative side to school and incorporate that in an academic sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty vital, I think, because it's to them, you know, or to anybody with AD and ADHD and a lot of the a lot of these, you know, disabilities. It's important for them to relieve a lot of the stress and to be really good at something for just positive, you know, just their own positive self-esteem, you know, and I think everybody needs to be like good at something. So, because a lot of times, especially in the academic world, the behavioral problems, they don't excel a lot. You have to allow them to let their creative side out and to excel at something else, you know, just like everybody can do usually, you know?
Right. So to take this, to keep going with this subject, especially where the school world is concerned, because this is something that can really can wreak havoc in a home. Okay. So one of the issues that kids with ADD or ADHD have is social issues. Interacting, and I'm sure you've seen this, interacting socially, knowing their space. You know, they tend sometimes to get in somebody's face and they shouldn't do that. Okay. So the other night at this meeting that Chad had, there was a couple of parents who were talking about, well, what can you do about this? And, you know, there should be, and this is what I want parents to know, in your schools, there should be a counselor or a school psychologist that can run groups. They usually run social groups for kids. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of kids out there who will say, I don't want to go to that group because those kids, I don't want to be involved with those kids. But this is something that really should be encouraged. And if it's not only at the school level, wherever you are, maybe you have a chapter of CHAD, which is what I'm on the board at, Children and Adults with ADD. It's chadd.org if you want to look up their website. And then you can look and see, I think if you put your zip code in, they can let you know where your closest chapter would be. And so you may want to look to CHAD to see, are you doing any social skills building? But here's something that somebody talked about the other night that I think is very important. So when we have 504 plans and we have IEPs, we can do certain things for our children that would be beneficial for them. And one of the things that one of the parents came up with is that these were young children now. These were probably first, second, third graders. And every day at recess, she had popsicle sticks with the children's names on the popsicle sticks. And what she would do is every day she would switch up and put two different kids together and say, during this recess period, you're going to have to hang out with this child and interact with them. This way, it's not only about the child with the disability that is being pushed on to another child, which, you know, is hard to really make that happen in a positive way. Now you've got the whole class involved, which doesn't really single out the kid with ADD or autism or ADHD. And I'm just thinking that sounds like that's something that's could be pretty positive. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really positive thing. There's a lot of good techniques that teachers can use, I think, that really bring kid more into interacting socially with other kids. But that does sound like a really good start.
Right.
Sometimes if the kid has more severe social interactions, it's a good way to get them started in like a small group setting. But that's a really good way. It's always good when somebody uses like a tool like that to bring the kid in rather than, all right, go play on the yard, you know, kind of thing.
Right, exactly. So jumping from school for a minute, I want to talk a little bit about how to handle teaching your children, especially kids with ADD, ADHD, how to do things for themselves, okay? Because it's really vital as these children get older that they learn how to accomplish things, because that's what's going to help them feel good. Because, see, they're living with the label, no matter what, of ADD, ADHD. And even if you have the most positive parent in the world, there are times when that label is going to cause you to feel like you can't do something that another child can do, which can cause a lot of frustration in the parent world, okay? And to digress for just 1 minute, I talked a little bit about my son, my oldest son, embracing his bipolar, and I asked him when we were up there visiting why he was able to do that. And he said, well, you brought Mike and I up to embrace our ADD, to not be afraid of it, to feel comfortable with it, to see it as more of a gift than something that was detrimental. And we did, and we both embraced our IEPs. We were able to go up to the teachers and talk to them about, we get extra time. You know, we didn't do our homework last night, but we get an extra day, whatever it was. And they handled that very well. So I just wanted to go back and show everybody out there that if you communicate effectively with your children about the disability and things that can be helpful to them and teach them how to embrace it instead of run away from it, it'll be very positive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially if you get it on an early age, if you help with the early age.
Exactly.
Basically what that's showing a teacher is that this kid is enthusiastic. You know,
right.
if a kid comes up to me and he's asking me questions and he's really trying, even though he's doing bad, it's like that's such a good precedence,
I should say.
And if he's doing that throughout his academic career, you know, in high school, then the college, he's talking to the teachers and he's showing, even though he's not the best student, that's something that all teachers are like, wow, I like this in the kid. He's enthusiastic.
Right.
And rather than he's struggling at school and he's trying to crawl in the back and he's behavioral.
He's advocating for himself.
Yeah, he's advocating for himself, and you learn that behavior early on.
Which is really important. Advocating is important not only in school but in life.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to feel comfortable to go up to people. So if you had a kid in your class who had an IEP, all your kids have IEPs.
Correct, yeah.
And they came up to you and he came up to you and said, you know, Mr. Marino, I have extra time on tests, so wouldn't that be great for you, for him, even though you know it's on his IEP, that he's coming up to you and talking to you about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that would be a benefit anytime a kid communicates in a positive way about their tests, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's great. Okay, so let's get back to little kids now. Little kids being, you know, anywhere from 5, 6, all the way up to 10 or 11, and we're trying to teach them how to do things.
Okay.
Okay, so sometimes as parents, we end up nagging.
It's true.
Right. And I personally think that the nagging comes from giving them too many things to do at one time. And I think you and I, both being ADD, and if you can remember back to your childhood, if your parent told you, go clean your room, you probably couldn't do that.
That's correct.
Because you needed it broken down. Okay. So let's just start out with tying your shoes, right? So how about if you work with your child for as long as it takes, and for some children this is going to take a while, for as long as it takes for them to learn, and this is just an example, how to tie their shoes. So once they've mastered that, you know, give them a certificate. They sell certificates in teacher schools, or you can get them in other places, probably Staples or, you know, Office Max or one of those places, little certificates of achievement. And so every time they achieve something that was difficult for them, tying their shoes, setting the table. Here's a big one, because dinner time is such an important part of communication for families.
Do you still remember the person who taught you how to tie your shoes?
I most certainly do.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
It's funny how you always remember that.
Yeah, it was my mom. She taught me.
Yeah, my neighbor taught me how to tie my shoes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I was getting babysitted, and my neighbor taught me how to tie my shoes. It's one thing I do remember, like, about her, the most. I've seen her around. But that's the one thing, like, I always like. I was like, oh, I remember she taught me how to tie my shoes.
That's amazing that you remember that like that. See, so it was positive. We tend to remember a lot of the positive things that happen. So you give them a certificate for everything that they've accomplished, and you know, hang these certificates up in their room. this is making them feel really positive about themselves, and you makes you feel good too because they're accomplishing things. So let's talk about setting the table. So maybe what you teach them first is how to fold the napkins and put them out, you know, and just stay right there. Don't run to another situation in setting a table. Don't run to the plates till the napkins are done.
Yeah.
So that they master. See, we have to build on successes with these kids. And the more successful they are, the better they're going to feel about themselves. So if they learn how to fold the napkin, give them a certificate. I mean, how much could these little pieces of paper cost? They don't cost that much. Or if you're also ADD and creative as a parent, you could probably draw the certificate on the computer and then print them out. So you don't even have to buy them. Putting the child's name on it with a little gold star and putting them up places where they can see them. So now they know that the next step is they're going to learn how to put the dishes out. Then they're going to learn, after they master that, how to put the forks and the knives around the dishes and where they go, and then the cups come out. So once they master setting the table, now you move on to something else. And they're getting certificates all along, so they're feeling good. You're not yelling. You're talking to them very calmly because, of course, you're all going to run out and learn mindfulness. A great book for all of you to read would be The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. It's a great book. So another wonderful book also is called Scattered by Dr. Gabor Maté. And I would encourage everybody who's listening today, it's just a wonderful book because he really talks about what is underneath the symptoms of ADD, and I think you would all enjoy it. And he takes it from the infant phase all the way up to adulthood and even talks about couples with ADD. So once they've mastered all this, then you can move on to other jobs, little jobs that you have for them around the house that are going to help them feel good about themselves. And you may string together then four or five things. Okay. So let's talk for a minute about the whole organization piece, especially where it comes to school. And tell me, Anthony, about the kids in your class. Are they organized?
No, that's right. One of the biggest problems, actually, is organization.
Okay. And how do you work with them with that?
Well, one thing we do is we have like binders, and we make sure that for each class we tell them where their binders are at. You know, we put their names on the binders.
Okay.
And we just try to make sure we tell them to put all their things in the binders, and they can't take them home.
Okay.
So they can't lose them. It's always there when they need it.
Okay.
And to put them back. And I kind of show them, at least I just started getting into the habit with this here, is I show them like how to put the binders away. You know, I kind of like show each kid as he comes up with the binders away. But just because I got the job recently, and I kind of walked into the one or the class already started. This is things you want to do in the beginning of the year.
Right.
You take every class, you give every kid the binder, they put their name on it, and then you show them how you want it stacked.
Right.
And then you go over it, you know, and you just kind of like show them what you expect of them. This is how you stack the books. This is how you stack the binders. Everything we give you, and it's not homework, you know, we tell you, here's the hole punch machine. You punch your holes in it, you put it in your binder, and you do it like this, you know, and that's the way we kind of like have to like, we walk them through the process.
And so after a while, they get to master that, right?
Yeah, after a while, they know what's expected. You come in, you say, hi, how's it going? Grab your book and grab your binder.
Okay.
And they grab it. And then, you know, 2 minutes before class, put your book and binder away. And then when they don't do it, you stop them and you say, hey, remember what he told you, you know? And they get, sometimes they get lazy.
Right, right.
Or whatever, but
no,
you walk
no
them through.
No, there's no such thing as lazy.
Yeah, well, they get
overwhelmed.
They get overwhelmed.
Yeah, that's just, lazy is a label, and I tell parents that I work with, don't ever use that word because, again, you don't want to – it's a negative word.
They get energy deficient.
Right, exactly. Energy deficient. I like that. That's a good way to
they get energy deficient.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the organization. So the kid comes home with their backpack, right? And right away, as parents, what we want to do is we want to fix it for them. So we grab the backpack. We open it up. We start getting angry. Because there's papers all over the backpack. this stuff crumpled up. Maybe their lunch from 2 days ago is in there, and it smells like somebody died. So we're getting angry. Okay. So what do? Here's what you do. Sit down with your child and calmly, and this takes a little bit of time, and this is what communication is all about. It takes time. And that time, that extra time you're spending with your child, means a lot to your child. And if you do it calmly, they're going to react with you in a better way. So sit down and talk to them about how do you think the best way would be to organize this backpack? What do you think the best thing to do? Don't tell them what to do. Ask them and see what they come up with. I mean, what do you think about that? Anthony, I think that really helps a child to use that thinking skill that they need and to develop the executive function so that they can become more organized in their mind.
Yeah, that might just do the trick.
I'm not saying it's going to answer the problem.
Yeah.
But it's a way to engage them rather than you just telling them how to do something as a parent.
I could see that.
Because I don't know if you remember back, I do, when I was in elementary school and high school, I was very unorganized.
I was too. I just remember totally being overwhelmed.
Right.
There were so many papers and so many things to write and just so many just loose leaf things that were like all over the place. It just got out of control
right.
after a while.
Right. So in sitting down with your child and asking them what they think, listen to what they're saying. One of the things that I do with the kids that I see is I use a file folder. It's a zip-up. It's like a file folder like that expands out. So
okay.
There's 13 slots in it, and it zips up. And I get it at Staples or Office Max because I usually buy them for the kids. And I set it up by subject and then behind it homework. So, for example, if biology is their first subject, it's biology homework, then English homework, then social studies homework. So I take the thought process out of organization, and all the papers go into this folder that zips. Not really a folder. It's a file. It's a file that kind of accordion file.
That okay.
kind of flows out. So that's what I do. But I also ask the kids when I work with them, what do you think of this? Is this a good idea? How can we make this better?
Yeah.
To get them involved in the process so it's not just me telling them what to do. You know, I see a lot of parents who are very rigid, and that's a bad thing to be with a kid with ADD, because that rigidity is only going to make them angry. So don't be rigid about anything but safety with your children. Okay, when it comes to organization, let them have a say in what's happening there. Because I think if they have a say in it, then it's going to stay more organized than if you're just being rigid and handing them things to do. So, okay, from there, we're going to move on to something that I think is really important. We talk too much to our kids,
yeah.
especially parents with ADD, ADHD kids. So we use too many verbal cues, and we have to continue, and we have to keep saying to them over and over and over again, did you brush your teeth? Did you wash your face? Did you put your books in your book pack? Did you do all those things? Okay, so what I want to help everybody today with, and I'm sure Anthony can chime in with this, is a way to cut down on the verbal cues. So here's something that I used to do with my boys when they were young. Young being anywhere from 7 to 11. They had their own bathroom. They had their own mirror in the bathroom. So I would put up pictures of people brushing their teeth, washing their face, doing the things in the bathroom they needed to do. So I would send them to the bathroom and tell them, just remember to look at the mirror. And then on the back of the door, because they always close the door, the word stop in red, I put up there, okay? I didn't write it on the door, but I cut out letters. Stop, did you do everything you needed to do? And this was really helpful because it cut down on me having to nag all the time. Because let's face it, this isn't about the kids not wanting to do it. It's more about the kids forgetting to do it. Especially in the world of ADD inattentive, they get into that creative, they get into that creative thing in their head where they're thinking about music they're going to compose or, you know, pictures they're going to draw, and you're sending them off to the bathroom. I mean, think about when you were little. Did your parents used to tell you 10 times to brush your teeth?
Yes.
Okay. And you would forget.
Yes, I did forget a lot of stuff, and there was a lot of verbal stuff now that I think about it, absolutely.
So how would it have helped you if there were pictures up of things to kind of prompt you?
Yeah, I really like that idea. I would really like to try that.
Yeah, to remember to do certain things. So here's the other thing, and I didn't do this, but I thought about it the other night when I was at this meeting, is the whole backpack thing. So if you're finished with your backpack at night, then it's got to go to the door. And that also can be part of the prompts that you're using in a nonverbal way to let your kids know, this is what I expect of you. So writing things down or using pictures, and nowadays with the smartphone, you can actually have some fun and take pictures of your own kid brushing their teeth with the smartphone and pictures of them washing their face and put them up on the mirror, or pictures of their backpack and the front door, at the front door. See, I'm really trying to figure out things that they can do so there isn't so much nagging.
Yeah, a creative way to get kids just to be reminded without you having to constantly say it.
Right, because for me growing up, there was a lot of nagging, and you just said for you there was a lot of verbal.
Absolutely. I mean, I think most of us have been nagged at least at least I remember just being constantly nagged at by parents.
Right.
And even as I'm older, there's certain things you can still see, like a parent, like, bring up. It almost feels like nagging, you know?
Right. Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah, me too.
Never ends, right?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it never ends. The parents still kind of nag about some things or something, you know?
Exactly. So to add to this nonverbal situation, which I think is pretty cool, so the things that you've taught them how to master, okay, and you've calmly walked them through one thing at a time, because I think as you and I think back on our own childhood, if things had been explained to us in a streamlined way, you know, one thing at a time, I think we would have been more successful.
I agree.
So to add to this nonverbal world, when you want them to set the table and you ask them, hey, it's time for dinner and it's your turn to set the table, or it's after dinner and it's your turn to load the dishwasher, mm-hmm. you can use a picture, you know, if it's turning into a nagging thing. Or you can hold up their certificate that they mastered this and say, look, you mastered it. You're so great at this. See, if you turn things more into a positive, less than a negative, you're going to get so much more out of your child. If you really understand how important the need for them to hear from you, how wonderful they are, and they really, really need your attention in a positive way. And I'm sure Anthony can speak to the difference between positive attention in the school level versus negative attention, and how do the kids react?
Yeah, absolutely. When you give them, I mean, our school is actually really good about giving kids positive attention and a lot of times they like us and they really like the school, and you know, it's they get a lot of attention. They really enjoy hanging out with adults a lot because they feel like they get a lot more attention that they're not getting that at home.
Right.
You know, from their own family.
Right. And I think that this is something that I really want to drive home to the parents that are listening today, that this is a podcast on positive parenting. And that's what I'm trying to do here, is to help all of you to understand how important this is. Okay, so let's do some extreme cases. So you have kids that come home from school and they don't want to talk to you. You know, you want to hear about their day and they don't want to. They would rather throw temper tantrums for whatever reason it is. So much of it may be because of something that happened at school. Maybe something not positive happened to them during the day.
Okay.
Maybe they didn't know how to interact with another kid, and or kids pushed them away so they were eating lunch by themselves. So think about, at 7 or 8 years old, having to process this feeling of being pushed away, being outside the circle of, say, the what you want to call the in crowd, and not being accepted, how devastating that must be to a child. So they come home, and you're the only person that they feel that they can really give it to. Who are they going to give it to? The teacher? No, that's not going to work. You know, are they going to give it to the bus driver on the way home? No, I don't think so. And maybe at times they do, depending on the kid. But if they come home and they're in this frame of mind where they just don't want to talk, my suggestion, and I've done this with other clients that I work with, is that you probe them a little bit, that you give them a hug, you tell them how much you love them, and say, I'm here for you. Is there something you want to talk about? Did something happen at school today? And if they don't react at that moment, I think the best thing to do is just to say, you know what, if you don't want to talk about this right now, that's okay, but I'm here for you. I'm here to listen whenever you need me. And for those of you who work, who are not home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, I think Anthony and I, parents were home when we came home. Did your mom work?
Not when I was young.
Okay. So, yeah, my mom was home too. So, you know, they were able to really see, not that they all the time questioned what was going on with us, because they were sometimes in their own world, but they were there for us when we came home. And even though at times it was difficult for me, I really did look for my mom being there. Today it's a different world. Both parents are working. The kids come home. Some of them are latchkey kids where, you know, they're fairly young and they come home to an empty house. And that's kind of sad when, you know, there's nobody there for them.
Yeah, I also remember I was really young. My mom didn't work. But then as I got into, like, fourth or fifth, my mom started working. And,
oh, how did you? Were you a latchkey kid?
Nah, not really. I was more, you know, one of the things you realize, though, is that there's a lot of, because when they work and they're working, you know, both parents are working, one comes home, one expected to, like, make dinner and do all these things.
Right.
There's a lot of anxiety going on,
yes,
you know?
Yes, yes.
Because it's like, oh, I just got home now, I got to make dinner, and now I got to do this, and
right,
I got to do that. And so you get a lot of these pent-up emotions and aggressions, and a lot of fights break out, you
right,
know, between the parents, you know? Like, to be honest, I just remember a lot of fighting going on.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. You know what might be a really good idea for those of you who are listening, whether you work or you don't, when you get home, if you are working, or when your child comes home, make a half an hour special time for them. So, depending on the age, you know, your adolescents are probably not going to want to talk to you, and they're the best people to use the nonverbal cues with because they're not into the communication. Although, if you start young, what you'll notice is as they get older, they will want to come home and communicate. But if you use, you know, my idea of a half an hour of really special time for them, just engaging with them in special things. Don't talk about school. unless they really want to talk about it. You know, because if you force them to talk about school, that's the only thing they're going to feel that you communicate with them about. So let's make this something that they want to do for a half an hour. You know, whether they really want to talk to you or not, if they're upset, you want them to know that you're there for them. But if they want to just have fun for that half an hour, they want to play games with you, or they want to go for a walk, whatever it is they want to do, I think that that would really help them to transition better from school to home. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really good way to transition.
Yeah.
Because, you know, kids just...
Because we never got that.
Yeah, I never got that.
No.
I mean, there's got to just think of something. If you find yourself in fighting a lot or a lot of anxiety when you come home, you just got to, Justine was saying, you got to find something to make it just to allow yourself to relax,
you know,
whatever it is.
Right. No, I agree. So we have some questions that people left on my forum.
Okay.
On my website. And for those of you who didn't do that, I just want to tell you that my website address is missadd.com. And if you go to the forum section every week, what I do is I set up what the show is going to be about for the future Sunday. And you can leave me questions if you don't want to call into the show, and I'll answer them. So here's one, and you can help me answer this, Anthony. We have a 16-year-old son who is ADD. How do we get him to get off the Xbox and do his homework? I guess we are asking, how do we make rules and make sure that the rules are followed without having a war each day? It's a good question. So Anthony's an Xbox guy. So what would it have taken to get you off the Xbox?
Honestly, when it comes to those kind of things, I think the best way is always a reward system.
Okay.
You know, allow a certain time if the homework's done. You know, if you get this homework done, then you can have this amount of time before you go to bed or whatever. Or you make it like in the sense of if the kid comes home from school, you could have this amount of time, and then you got to start on your homework. However, that's kind of a bad thing. A lot of times video games can be kind of addicting.
Yes.
So it's good to always try to get the homework first.
Yes.
And then do the video game as a reward.
Right.
I highly recommend that system. Now, if the kid's already addicted and he's already into video games and you can't pull him, it's a strain. At that point, I'd say you got to just, like, jump the cord, like put the Xbox
yeah.
away.
Yeah, I agree.
And then pull it out when you feel like
it's a reward.
It's a reward. Like, yeah. Oh, now you're doing good. Okay, you can take it out of the closet,
right.
You know, and put it away.
So let me ask you something, Anthony, because I don't understand video games because
yeah.
I never played them. I know my boys did, but I had a set time mm-hmm. for them.
Okay.
I have a couple of clients who parents tell me the kids are on for 7 hours a day.
Easily, that's easy, yeah.
Right. So that's really can be very detrimental because they're not socializing. I mean, this is one of the big things, that the socialization. So what would be your idea to get them off there, and how would you do it?
Well, one of the best, I think, ways I find is to try to do some kind of sign him up for some activity that he might be into. Also,
oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Also, if he's into video games, one thing to do if you feel like he's just playing them by himself is to get him with a group of friends playing the video game. At least then he's kind of socially interacting.
It's a good idea.
With kids, because there might be one or two kids after a while be like, all right, I'm bored. Let's go do something else.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. That's what I used to do.
And then they'll drag them off it. Usually it's very rare when you find five kids who are all addicted all at once. I mean, you can.
Right.
But it's a very strange thing. There's always somebody who's like, let's go do this, or let's go get something to eat, or let's go somewhere. And then he goes with that circle of friends or whatever.
Which is really good. And I used to do that, especially my younger son, who is on the spectrum of autism with mm-hmm. the nonverbal learning disability. He struggled with social interaction. So I would call parents and invite friends over, and I'd have a pizza, and they would play video games, and I used to watch the interaction so I could give him some feedback
yeah.
on some stuff. I would stay in the shadows. They wouldn't see me. But, yeah, you're right. I think that's a good way, too, because they would get off at times and go do other things.
And there's also different kinds of video games. For all the parents who don't know this now, video games are progressing to the point where you can play a lot of video games that you maybe wouldn't like there's Wii Bowling.
Right.
There's a lot of interactive, like Wii has these Wii Fit things, and there's silly things you can do on the video games now where there's a lot of motion involved. There's ones like Guitar Hero,
right,
where you have a guitar. And
love
you can,
that.
Like, and, yeah, you play music in a rock band.
Right.
There's a lot of games that are more socially thing, you know, and I remember even for a while there, like I had, there's one called Rock Band where I had a little drum kit and my friend had like a mic and then they had the guitar and we're all like playing, we're all like wagging, you know, like these things and like we're a real band or something. But we're just like silly hitting this plastic stuff, you know.
That's great.
But it was like, it's really like interactive now, so it can make it more of a social thing.
Right.
But the real pitfall, which is I think what me and Justine are really getting at, is you don't want the kid sitting there 8 hours playing by himself.
No.
On a computer or on a console. Or another thing you want to be, that's kind of tricky, you really have to watch your kid for, is there's a lot of these things called PSPs and Nintendo, I just forget the name off the top of my head now I think about it, but they're like portable game systems.
Okay.
And you can, like, pull them out, and you can play for hours doing that as well.
Yeah, see, and that's the other thing. Look, I do know that one of the things that video games teaches is planning. And that a lot of parents aren't aware of that, but I actually had a very good therapist years ago when the boys were young who put my mind at ease, although did not want them on there for 7 hours, but said, you're going to see that this new generation coming up is going to be much better at planning because that's the way the video games make their mind work, because they have to do this to get to this step to then to get to the next step. You know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
absolutely. A lot of them are like level-based.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the next question. I have two very active boys. Both have ADD. Sometimes I find myself on edge because I realize that I and my kids are being judged by people around me. This is a good question. Me as a parent with unruly children, how should I handle that added pressure? Okay, so I can speak to this firsthand because my older son with the oppositional defiant, even though he didn't get in trouble at school, there were times when we would be out together and he could be unruly. My younger son had the NLD along with ADHD, the nonverbal learning disability, so he also had physical tics that you could say. And I actually had people call me up, you're not going to believe this, and tell me they didn't want their kids playing with him because they were afraid that other people would think that there was something wrong with their kid if they were playing with my kid. So I get this question. I really do. And here's what I had to do. I had to make this about my kids and go out of my way to really help them, and especially with my younger son, try to get him involved with other kids. So my house was swinging doors. Kids were always at my house, and they liked being there because I was kind with all the kids, and I had boundaries. I mean, they had to do what I asked them to do, but I was very engaging. But I understand this because there were times when I would be out with my older son, and when he was little, not as he got older, he would, you know, be acting very ODD, and I watched other people look at me, and I felt like I was being judged the way I was handling things, but I at times would yell at him, and that was absolutely the wrong thing to do. Because when you yell at your children, especially out in public, it just escalates them more. So I think ignoring sometimes, and I don't know how you feel about this, Anthony, but ignoring some of the behavior and kind of maybe just walking out of the store and not worrying about what other people are thinking because it's your family and you have to do what's right for your family. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's not a bad way to do that. Ignoring can go, actually, I use it a lot with one kid in particular in my school where I have to ignore certain behaviors and then address other ones because it becomes a safety issue.
Okay.
But engage them on things that I feel that he'll enjoy and that I like. So they'll come in and say crazy things, or like you're saying in public, they'll say, a lot of times they try to get a rise out of you by saying something dirty or say something, you know,
right,
that's going to be upset you in a way, or that you might take super personal, and so you have to let that one go, and then just engage in them in another way, you know, and try to and ignore it.
Probably
and
get
then,
them.
And then just keep moving forward and kind of veer them on the right track, maybe. Something.
Right, so like get them off what it is that they're yelling about.
Correct.
In a kind, assertive way. You know, if you can get your child out of the store, I'm dealing with this specific question. So what I'm assuming, okay, because this person, the way they're asking the question, is that they're dealing with people who are judging them. So this has to be behavior that is seen outside the house.
Okay.
Okay? And so what I'm thinking about is, if let's just say if the child is, you pick them up after school or they're in a store and they're angry and you don't really understand why they're angry, but they're acting out.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, you know, calmly get them to the car and get them home. Do not, I'm going to underline this, have difficult conversations with a child, adolescent, or an adult in the car because they feel trapped. There's no way out. They can't get out of the car. The car's moving. Even when they're stopped at a red light and you don't ever want your kid to fly out of the car. So wait to have difficult conversations till you get home so that if they feel like they need to take a time out from the conversation, they can leave the room. Or you can. Because trust me, with this positive parenting, we all as parents need some time out from the situation. And it's okay to say to your child, I'm going to go take a time out for a little while. I'm coming back. You know, I'm not leaving, but I just need to take a time out. So possibly if you can get the child out of the store where you are, bring them to the car, bring them home, even if they're screaming and kicking in the car. When you get them home, allow them to come in the house alone. Don't drag them in the house. And use the breathing that you're going to learn in mindfulness, okay? Because you're going to take some deep breaths. And trust me, everyone who's listening, these deep breaths, and Anthony, you can attest to this because you do yoga, really can help you calm down. So if you take, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you take these deep breaths and then try to have a heart-to-heart with your child about behavior. And don't make it about, you know, people were looking at you. Don't make it about other people. Find out what's really going on with them, because that's what this is about. This isn't about other people. Because I don't know if in class you notice that kids will act out because they look for attention.
All the time.
Right, yeah. And so I'm saying remove that. Don't make that part of it, because that just doesn't work. Okay, so here's the next question. My son is 15 and ADHD. How do I deal with my family, my sister-in-law in particular, who always chimes in telling me how I should be parenting better? What do I say to get her to stop criticizing me? Okay, so first of all, my feeling is if you don't have a child with ADHD, then you can't understand what it's like to parent one. Is that correct?
I agree with that.
Yeah. So there's a video out there, and this video absolutely changed my life. It's called Fat City. And there's a doctor, just give me a second, because my ADD's kicking in. I can't remember his name, because that's one of my things is with names. He is from Yale, and he has done a series of videos on ADD, ADHD. I think he also does autistic and Asperger's. And when I watched this video back in the 80s, my nephew was 5 at the time, and my sister felt it was really important for me to understand a lot of his behaviors that I thought he was just spoiled. And when I watched this video, it really changed my life. So if you have people in your life that are having a difficult time understanding how you're handling your children, I think a good thing to do would be to ask them to watch the video. And here's his name. His name is Rick Lavoie. And Rick is, again, I think he's still at Yale, and he's excellent. So if you want to go on to YouTube, you can really catch a lot of his really interesting videos. Do you know Rick Lavoie at all?
No, I never heard of
him. Yeah, I would suggest that you might want to take a look at Fat City. One of the things that he does in the video is he gets teachers and he blindfolds them and says, okay, now do the work. Because what he's trying to show them is what it's like to have a learning disability and really be able to do what we expect the kids to do in school. So I think you...
I can totally relate to that.
Yeah, because it's so difficult for them. So, you know, I would just be kind to your sister-in-law and explain to her that your life is very different with your child than her life may be with her children. And just because her way of parenting works for her, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for your children, and that you thank her very much for her concern. Because, you know, you always want to role model to your children how to be assertive and kind. Communication is something in the ADD world that I know myself, and I don't know about you, Anthony, but growing up, I had a really difficult time communicating because when people would talk to me, I would get defensive right away, and that would really shut down a lot of the communication for me. Role modeling to your children, with them and around them, so they can see positive communication, is really a good way for them to learn how to talk to people. Did you have an issue with communication growing up?
Yes, but in many respects I did, but I was pretty good by the time I got to a certain age. When I was really young, I had a hard time.
Okay.
But remember I told you about everybody in my family's Italian, I was the youngest, and so, like, I never got a word in edgewise, you know?
That's right.
I remember I was, like, growing up, and, like, I had a speech impediment because I don't even think I had one. I was telling everybody is that I never got a word in. They're like, do you want some food? And I was about to say, and they're like, yeah, he wants some food. The kid wants some food. So, like, I don't think I talked till, like, I was a certain age because I never got to practice my words. And they're like, oh, he's got a speech impediment. And I'm like, I never got to practice, you know? Like, it was just impossible. If you grow up in those families where everybody does everything kind of for you, and they're like...
Well, yeah, because they don't ask you what you want. They just assume what it is you want.
Yeah, and then they're like, he's talking too much, now he won't shut up, you know? And it's like, well, I'm trying to practice my words, you know?
So did you really have a speech impediment, or are they just...
I think I had some, like, problem with maybe my S's or something, or I don't, you know, like, certain vowel sounds I wasn't, you know, pronouncing correctly. But I was so young, I don't really remember. But it's obviously, I think, fixed right now.
Yeah.
But at the time, I probably did a little bit, but, like, I just think I just needed to practice more.
Well, you also had two older sisters.
Two older sisters, and they
right.
kind of did everything for me when I was a little kid, you know.
Right, exactly. And they just, again,
talked for me.
Right, what
it
was.
They, you know, they get super protective over you. You're the baby brother,
right.
You know.
I was the baby girl in the family, so it's the same thing, you know. It was like everybody was taking care of me, and I wasn't really able to talk for myself. So I didn't have a speech impediment at all, but I felt kind of frustrated at times because I didn't feel like my opinion mattered, even as a young kid. It was what they thought I wanted.
Yeah, I can see that.
And so I would suggest that everybody who's listening, if you have, you know, of course you have a baby in the family, just be aware of that. If the kids are old, the other kids are trying to do things for them all the time, let them figure it out, because they can. I mean, I think it's important. So we have another question here. It says, I have three children, two boys and a girl. The boys are 10 and 7, and the girl is 5. How do I get them to settle down and go to bed on time? Each night is a battle. How do I keep from losing it? Okay, so first of all, they all shouldn't be going to bed at the same time. The 10-year-old should be going to bed a half an hour later than the 7 and 5-year-old. And that is what's going to really help the 10-year-old to feel like they're growing up. And that's what you want, okay? So in terms of the 7 and 5-year-old, what you need to do is really set up a schedule for bedtime. I mean, you can jump in if you want, Anthony, but I think it's important that they stop playing video games at least an hour before they're going to go to bed, that maybe they're going to bed and they're reading a book or they're listening to some music. They either have to take a bath, take a shower, get ready for whatever the next day is, whether it's school or camp or, you know, just staying home. But you need to have a schedule that you stick to, and you stick to that schedule if you want, even on the weekend when they're young, because they can't just stay up till all hours of the night. But see, it's all about relaxing them to get them ready for bed. So if they're playing games or watching, you know, videos or television that's going to excite them, then it's going to make it that much more difficult for them to settle down. And that's when the parents start to escalate. So if you can sit down with your kids and explain to them what bedtime is going to look like. I mean, nobody ever did that for us.
No, yeah.
We were just thrown into the bed. Hey, it's time for bed. So if you sit down with your 10-year-old and say, you know, you're 10, so you're going to go to bed a half an hour later, and the other two are probably going to start to, and say, you know what, when you're his age, you'll get to go to bed a half an hour later too. It's the rite of passage. He's the oldest in the family. And explain that you're going to start, say the bedtime for the 7 and 5-year-old is 8:30 or 8 o'clock. Then you're going to start at 7 getting them into the bathroom. You're going to have the pictures on the mirror so they know what they have to do. You know, the back of the door is going to say stop. If the 5-year-old can't read, then you're going to have to help her a little bit more with that. But you're going to start getting them ready at 7, so they have to shut down the video games or the videos, put away their toys. You can read to them, which is very positive, before they go to bed. And then they can continue to read a little bit while they're laying in bed. They can have a little nightlight on, because what I notice a lot with kids with ADHD, and you can jump in if you see this too, Anthony, I see a lot of anxiety at night.
Yeah, it's hard for them to calm down. You got to really try to bring them down.
Did you have difficulty falling asleep at night? I did. I can tell you that.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I had a very hard time falling asleep. I was always anxious about a lot of different things. So, you know, you want to make sure that you set this up with them. And if you set this up ahead of time and the whole family sits down, including, you know, your husband, to really talk about how this is going to work, there's no surprises. Because what I've noticed is that kids with ADD, ADHD, they don't like surprises. They want to know. They like structure. And so I think you're really going to see that if you do this with them, it's going to be more structured. So I think we're just about wrapping up. This went very quick today, and I want to thank Anthony again for being a part of the show. We're going to decide what we're going to do for next week and let everybody know. We haven't decided yet. If you want to do us to do more of this topic, then by all means, you can absolutely go on to my website, missadd.com, and write me a note and let me know if you want any further information on this. Also, I'm on Facebook, Miss ADD. And what you can do is you can like the page and then you can write to me there also. If you're in the South Bay and you want to get in touch with me, you need coaching or therapy, just feel free to get in touch with me either on Facebook or on my website again at missadd.com. I'm also on Twitter. I now have about 610 followers, which is exciting for me, and I send out tweets every day. Also on Wednesday nights, I run a support group for adults affiliated with CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD. It's 7:30 to 9 at the Center for Learning Unlimited in Torrance. So I want to sign off.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, and Anthony will be back probably next week, and we'll have another topic. So I want to sign off now and tell everybody to have a great day. Again, thanks for listening. This is Miss ADD, and please remember to stay in the moment. Thanks.